the life divine is like a mountain of light where we climb from one summit to the other. And in the process, Sri Aurobindo is taking us to the home of truth. What does it mean? Truth is, how do we know that it is truth? Well, we have to have some basic postulate about it. And the postulate here is that truth must lead us to the one and the indivisible. That's why the mother says, truth is supreme harmony and delight. It is state of unity and oneness. Whatever leads us towards either division or leaves a gap or a gulf between different orders of reality cannot be the ultimate truth. They can be truths like you climb a mountain. And the ultimate gulf that we experience in our thought is the gulf between the creation and the creator. Even we wonder whether there is a creator or not. Of course, we all believe. But when we look at creation, a natural doubt arises in the average human mind. By average, I mean the mind that is not ready or willing to go deeper in its quest, that there is no God. That's the easiest lazy people's formula. Because those who are lazy, they are quick to arrive at conclusions. But the life divine would want us to be patient in our search for truth. Of course, Savitri leads us to the same truth, but in another way. Savitri is like a vast ocean and an ocean of love. So here we have to dive and drown. The more you drown and dive, you discover the same truth, oneness, delight. But life divine is like a mountain you climb. So it's not sometimes easy because here it's the mind. Savitri one dives from the heart and gets the rasa of love. The life divine leads us through the rasa of knowledge. There is a rasa of knowledge because life is full of wonder. And you know, Sri Aurobindo is revealing how beautiful it is. So ultimately it leads us to the sense of the delight and beauty that is there in creation. So we enter into this new book, book 2, The Knowledge and the Ignorance, the Spiritual Evolution. And unwittingly we just had a little demonstration of knowledge and ignorance, because when the mother's music started, most people I think would have just felt, you know. And then the next is, it's mother's music. And then there is the... So what is the difference? It's the same truth. But we cannot bear beyond a certain intensity. Whose problem it is? Our problem. But we are not ready to bear. And it's true of everything actually. So we are comfortable within limits, but Sri Aurobindo is slowly, slowly. Imagine, sometimes I just wonder that imagine if we were exposed to all the sounds in the cosmos, even sun is a sound, creation, people speak of the Big Bang. What it would be if some ear could actually receive that vibration, what it would be? Probably it'll be just blown off to pieces. So there is this thing about knowledge and ignorance, partly, not in every way. It's like the truth through a veil is ignorance. The truth without veils is knowledge. But we are not ready for that. So we have to grow from step to step. Like when a child is born, you can't expose the child to the sunlight directly. He's accustomed to darkness, so he must slowly move towards light. That is what Sri Aurobindo takes up in the life divine. That is the pattern he follows. So what is the pattern? How does he approach? So we have a chapter in Knowledge and Ignorance. This is about spiritual evolution, book 2. And it starts with part 1, the infinite consciousness and the ignorance. So this is, there is an infinite consciousness, meaning thereby it has no beginning, no end, no measure. You can't count it. Of course, he'll explain how we can arrive at that postulate. And the second is the ignorance. Ignorance is a limitation. Ignorance is finiteness, limitation. So in limitation we can measure, but infinite we cannot measure. And this is actually an answer to the common question that people ask. How was God born? Who made God? The problem with that is that if you answer, the question is only pushed one step backward. If you say X made God, so the question is who made X? So you go to A. Who made A? So ultimately, if you work backward, even logically, you will end up with infinite. Now, in the moment you say infinite, then there is no question of birth and death. By its nature, you cannot measure it, you cannot date it, you cannot limit it. And infinity is now a very valid, it's a concept in mathematics. It's a concept otherwise also. So this infinite consciousness, which actually is a way of saying the divine, but because in life divine, Sri Aurobindo is taking the logical approach of the mind. He leads us to that. And the ignorance. So finite, limited. That's what is ignorance. Ignorance is not absence of knowledge. It's finite and limited knowledge. Like if I say I am a body. Now I can't say it's wrong. If I say I am not the body, then it's very good to, easy to say it. But then, the moment there is pain, I look for a doctor. So it's not like I am not a body, but I am not the body. The body is there, it has its own role, it has its own place. But it's not the total truth. It is one of the truths. It has its own place. So that's how one proceeds. So there is a difference, because in one approach of knowledge, we say, I am not the body. I am not the vital, I am not the mind, I am not the thoughts, I am not the five elements. So who am I? I am the self. This one approach. But as I said, the problem of that approach is it doesn't give us the integral truth. It doesn't explain the body, it doesn't explain the mind. It doesn't explain so many things which we every day, which come to our, we cognize, we experience them. So it just uses a term maya, blanket. You are in ignorance, you are experiencing illusion, it's a maya. It doesn't really solve, as we saw yesterday, it's just cutting the knot. So he has taken this truth of reconciling these two, the infinite consciousness and ignorance. Is there a possibility of reconciling? So the chapter one is, as I said, from one mountain, it's a climb. So the even meditating on these words is very interesting. Chapter 1 is indeterminates, cosmic determinations and the indeterminable. Very, very simple actually. Indeterminates. So indeterminates are everywhere things which, what is determined, like when you say a person is standing on the road. So you ask him that, well, where are you going? He says, I am actually not sure. So he is not determined. He is not yet decided. So indeterminate is there is something, but it is not yet. You don't know. It can go this way, that way, anyway. So all the possibilities and probabilities are there. That's an indeterminate. Then, that's not the only thing we see in creation. Say an electrical points, charges, particles, they are indeterminates. But then you have something called as atom. Now atom becomes a generic indeterminate, means atom can make everything ultimately, materially is atom. But it's a generic indeterminate. It can become iron, it can become lead, it can become gold, it can become, ultimately plant, human body, everything. So it's a generic indeterminate. Then what is actually leading it towards becoming this or that? That becomes cosmic determinations, because we experience this is atom. At the bottom, electrical charges. But I can't just pass through it saying, basically it's atoms. I can't. It's solid. To my experience, it is solid. Of course, there are so many going deeper into it, but right now, just the cosmic determinations. So what is determining these atoms and electrons, protons, neutrons and still lower, simply electrical particles to move in a certain fashion to really become the form, structures and then to embody qualities. Quality brings a totally new dimension. One can understand that hydrogen and oxygen combines to create water. But what gives water the quality that it expresses through hydrogen and oxygen? So Sri Aurobindo is raising very deep, profound questions in quest of truth, which we must raise. So cosmic determinations and the indeterminable. Because where are these determinates, even the indeterminate, that man standing on the road wondering where he should go? Where did that particle come from? That electrical particle. So there he is using right now. It's a, because as I said, in a very scientific way he's approaching through the logical mind. So indeterminable. Meaning thereby I don't know. There's no way I can understand or know what is beyond it, behind it. Even scientists speak of this in a different way. Whoever has heard these, read the theorem of the Schrodinger's cat. There is the cat in the box. Is it dead? Is it alive? You can't say with surety unless you open the box. So there is an indeterminable. What is going to decide? What is going to determine? So these are the three terms he is using. Then he proceeds very scientifically. Starts with our experience. As I said, there are solid objects in all around in space and time. So then, what are space and time? So we know that space itself is extending boundlessly. There is no limit. And now though it is too much, literally too much, because they have discovered, they are very sure scientists, that Big Bang took place so much time back. And it was very logical that at the moment there would be basically a lot of particles must be released. And then slowly, after that, you will have formations of stars and galaxies. So the telescope started looking deeper and deeper till it went to the time when Big Bang should have been there. And what they discovered recently, this discovery has been, you know, very, I think 2-3 months back, and it came out that, you know, what they discovered is very amazing. So they discovered that they were expecting that after, say, 15 billion years, they should basically, the telescope should pick up some those electrical particles, nothing else. But they discovered further galaxies. So it completely changes the whole perspective. So the new theory which is coming up is that probably there is no beginning and no end. And we cannot say, but as of now we can say there is no beginning and no end. There is the cyclic universe. That's what basically the Vedas say, that there is no beginning and no end. This, it's cyclic in nature. It's full of wonder, you know, if you look at really this way. So there is space which is boundless, because this is a question. Even if the mind meditates on this for few moments, where are these stars drifting into? This we know, that they are drifting. And drifting at what speed? There is no time to accommodate. It's not like you get into a train and you say, okay, bhaiya, give me some space. They're drifting at an enormous speed. What light years? You just can't imagine. So they're drifting into what? So they're drifting and endlessly drifting. So there is this idea of space which is boundless. We don't know what is the end of space, because we cannot go beyond. We can only go up to the star, last limit. But what is beyond it? So scientists will say, have two propositions. One is its void, which is a paradox. What is void? Void has to be, you are giving another name to infinity, but you know, you say I can't measure, I don't, so I'm using the word void. Void means nothing that way. It means it's a void. Similarly, time. What will be the end of time? Where did time begin? Again, it's a paradox. We really don't know. So people have gone on to say that there is no reality of time, it's an abstraction, but time is real. I'm not going into that. Both that will come to the appropriate time. So Sri Aurobindo starts from there that if we really look at this creation, we will see these three things. One is, in the beginning, some particles. So these particles are the indeterminates. What will, supposing somebody is present at the first step, a human being with the human consciousness is present, he will see a lot of electrical particles. So what's going to happen? So there is no way he can know what's going to come out of this. So it's an indeterminate. Then he sees atoms are forming. Oh, wow, something has formed. But what is going to come out of it? So atoms become generic indeterminates. And then he will see stars and rings and galaxies. So they become cosmic determinants. So what is leading to that point? How is it that the electrical charges are becoming atoms and atoms are becoming galaxies and stars? There must be a process. So science tries to explain it. It's nice. It's good mental exercise, you know. I enjoy it. I used to enjoy it. So then the next level is that there is energy. Energy is the, you just can't measure it, you don't know, but you just say there is energy. Big bang, there was a concentrated energy. So there is an indeterminable. So that indeterminable is either a void, but a void cannot explain, so there is energy. And the term used is nature. So this energy, which is indeterminable, suddenly it throws out electrical particles. Electron come little later. Then it takes form as negative, positive and neutral charges. Then it becomes atom. So how does that become this step? So it explains this way, science explains this way, tries to explain. None of this has evidence. So it says, well, it's like, take the example that you're dancing randomly. Don't do it on the road. Huh? Somebody will say you're crazy. But imagine you are doing tanda, not on stage, but on the road. So what will happen? By the steps, a lot of things will be thrown up. Randomly you are picking up colors. Sometimes they show that on TV, no? They will pick up colors, throw it, and a magical picture comes. So something like that, because slowly this motion will take a rhythm and a pattern. The moment patterns are formed, then rest is explicable. That patterns are forming. So this pattern will continue repeating itself. That's how, you know, the science of fractals tries to understand. So there are patterns which are created, and these patterns begin to coalesce into larger patterns, then forms appear, etc., etc. But this is not a very satisfactory explanation, because we can understand material patterns are emerging. Okay, fine. But how out of these material patterns now plant is emerging? Something totally new. That's where the problem of water comes. We can understand that hydrogen and oxygen, they are fighting or jumping, wrestling, embracing. So they have suddenly coalesced. This is understandable. But then there is a new creation, water, with its own property, the property which is neither in hydrogen nor in oxygen. So why this happens? How to explain this? And then same thing happens in the plant and the animal and humans. So there is a generic indeterminate which is genes. So we are all because of our genes, not the genes we wear, but the genes we inherit. But look at it, what a diversity. We look at the diversity of genetic, it's amazing. Not only is it creating physical forms, genes do go into the making of our character also, at least the physical characteristics and certain aspects of character is because of the genetic material we inherit. We have inherited the animal also. So this is something, this was a truth known in ancient times. That's why when people often say, you know, in India there was all this, you know, Varna, the reason was this, they believed in heredity. They knew about heredity, they tried to do it. But obviously, if you make a very rigid way, it's like, if you don't allow a dog to crossbreed, it's not healthy in the long run, because it's counterproductive to evolution. So nature, destroys it. But basically, the truth of heredity is there. So again, through these genes, it's nowadays, there is a term they use it, for this, it's called as the evolutionary gap. The gap between what comes out and that on the basis of which it is being explained. So sometimes one can talk to, and you know, some people who argue, there is no God, it's all in the brain, it's all the brain mumbling, jumbling, fumbling, bumbling, neurons, and all genes. So I've done it once or twice, eh? It's not a very nice thing. But I said, so Professor Genes, Mr. Brain, Mr. Neuron, I have a name after some time. It doesn't work. It's so strange that I am just a bundle of genes, I am just neurons. Now again, when you see in human beings, brain, more or less all of us have similar brain. Maybe a few gyri, sulci, this way, that way, paanch, oh, lena dena. But look at it, that one brain can receive or express writings of Shakespeare and Wordsworth and Kalidas and Vyas and Valmiki. Another brain is struggling even with kakha gagha. Same brain. How to explain this? So this is a gap we cannot understand. So this is the point where we'll stop for today in our reading. It's a long chapter. So it may be three sessions because I don't want to rush through. So first Sri Aurobindo takes up this hypothesis, which is a scientific way. Then he says, what is the other possibility? Then he goes to the third. So let's go step by step. So the very first paragraph on chapter 1, indeterminates, cosmic determinations and the indeterminable. So he is explaining to us what everybody has said is inexplicable. Maya. Maya is measuring out the immeasurable. So he's explaining to us, this should be so, it's so exciting. For the first time, the Lord of Maya, Mayadhipati, is explaining his Maya. A consciousness force everywhere, inherent in existence, acting even when concealed, is the creatrix of the world, creator of the world, the occult secret of nature. This is just a master's sentence. Then he realizes we don't experience it. Although it takes just a little stepping back and we can see it. Everywhere there is consciousness. Everywhere there is an existence. Everywhere there is delight. These three are everywhere. However perverted, distorted, limited. Everywhere. But he will pause there because he realizes he has given a punchline. So then he starts. But in our material world and in our own being, consciousness is a double aspect. There is a force of knowledge. There is a force of ignorance. In the infinite consciousness of a self-aware infinite existence, knowledge must be everywhere implicit or operative in the very grain of its action. But we see here at the beginning of things, apparent as the base or the nature of the creative world energy, and in conscience, a total nescience. That's how we see that, you know, atom or well, let's say stone is jada. But see the difference between ignorance and knowledge. Everywhere it is there. So there is a force of ignorance, there is a force of knowledge. So the force of ignorance is, just as an example, we'll go deeper. You pick up a stone and you say it's a stone. What can you do with it? Throw it aside, break somebody's head. That's stone. What is knowledge? It picks up the stone and says, I can make a beautiful idol of God. Now you see what has happened. This is a force of knowledge. It sees the same stone. But knowledge is revealing to it something which ordinarily one cannot conceive. This is the difference when people often ask sometimes, what is there in the ashram? So they, there is samadhi, sometimes they ask also, what is, all kinds of questions anyway. So samadhi, so what is there in the samadhi? No, I don't need to go there. God is everywhere inside. I said, you missed the point. It is not just samadhi or, you know, whatever that. Some people have this audacity to use the word tomb. So I tell them, excuse me, it's shurabindo samadhi. Now it changes. Samadhi suddenly becomes significant to you. The very fact that you are connecting it, leave aside the occult and spiritual elements, I'm not even going into it. So it's the force of knowledge which makes us aware of something which the force of ignorance cannot see. They just see people putting their head on the samadhi and they smile inside. Ah, these ignorant fellows. Pathar par sir. Once Chodnarayanji said this very nicely. Somebody said, but what is there now, you know? What is the point of going there? So Chodnarayanji said in his characteristic andaj, he said, you know, he was erudite beyond measure. I mean, I remember once one of the Mahamandaleshwar telling him something and Chodnarayanji says, you are reading Ashtavakra Gita? He said, yes. He said, I can recount you from last page to first page. That kind of erudition. So Chodnarayanji tells him, हम मूर्ख हैं क्या कि पत्थर पर सिर रखने जा रहे हैं? Are we fools that we are going there only to place our head on the stone? See the difference between force of ignorance. Force of ignorance is seeing things with the jada vision. And force of knowledge is seeing things with a conscious vision. That's the difference. When mother sees Sri Aurobindo, she sees the divine builder. Builder of the marvel of the worlds. His presence is enough. This is the difference. The same eyes, same which we started with. One sees this way, one. So there is in us, both things are operative in human beings. We can see things from a force of ignorance. Why ignorance? Because it's limited vision. That's what we are saying. Well, of course there is stone. So that's a limited vision. We are not denying that. But there is a force of knowledge which sees the Deva Murti in the stone. As an example. So this is where we see that both things are there, but in the beginning we see things arising out of jada. And then something else happens. So a few lines below. As life here establishes and maintains its operations with difficulty on a foundation and in an environment of general death. So again he says, like if you go into the material creation, you will see that they are just particles on which solid things are floating. But it's electrical particles. Similarly, you see life somehow maintaining itself. But what is the reality? Below is death. Constantly it is swallowing up life. This is the vision of ignorance. Through the vision of knowledge, death is the instrument of perpetual life. That's how Sri Aurobindo reveals. There is no death. Just a change of life. From one to another. Now that's a vision of knowledge. That's how Sri Aurobindo says. Night is not our beginning nor our end. We have come to. She is the dark mother in whose womb we have hid. From too swift an awakening to world pain. From the light we come. By the light we go, live and to the light we go. So there are two. One is the force of ignorance which says. You know what? Morning comes. Sun rises out of darkness. And you know what? Sun sets back into the darkness. But if you go out in space, sun neither rises nor sets. You see, the earth turns away from the sun, or the earth turns toward the sun. Perspective changes. So force of knowledge reveals the same thing very differently than the force of ignorance. So this is what he's just setting the tones. Okay, so toward the end of this page, the first aspect of cosmic existence is an infinite which is to our perception an indeterminate, if not indeterminable. In this infinite, the universe itself, whether in its aspect of energy or its aspect of structure, appears as an indeterminate determination, a boundless finite. We have already spoken about it. There is simultaneously the indeterminate particles and simultaneously there are you know, determinate particles which will eventually become solid objects. They are existing together. Paradoxical, but necessary expression, which would seem to indicate that we are face to face with a supra-rational mystery as the base of things in that universe arise from where? See, Sri Aurobindo is a live divine can be seen as a master thriller. We are on treasure trail. Where is the universe coming from? We have those verses in the Rig Veda, no? But they leave us with the question. Certain questions are raised there. It's famous. Who can say, not even the gods, Nasadiya Suk, that vaccine war, it became so famous that out of the non-being, being is emerging. Who knows that ultimate mystery? Even the gods do not know it. Yeah, it's not given to gods to know it. It's given to man to know it. So, but that comes later. So, but people quote this as, so it is a mystery. So when we look at universe as a mystery, out of that nothing, apparent nothingness, things are arising, indeterminate and determinations. And not just one thing, few things, a vast number and variety of general and particular determinates. That's what we are speaking about. Which do not appear to be warranted by anything perceptible in the nature of the infinite, but seem to be imposed or maybe self-imposed upon it. There is nothing in the nature of particles that would, you know, why it should become like this. Nothing in the nature of atoms which indicates should become like this. Nothing in the nature of genes that it can grow into a conqueror and a sage. But it is there. This is the mystery. We give to the energy which produces them the name of nature. But the word conveys no meaning unless it is that the nature of things is what it is by virtue of force which arranges them according to an inherent truth in them. So this is how, you know, yes, nature, but why? Because there may be some truth inside it. So he confronts us with the cosmic paradox. Now, how does science explain? But first he states the problem very beautifully. Next page. We fail to discover how these different dispositions can come to constitute these different atoms. How they differentiate in the constituent occasion or cause necessitate the differentiate in the constituted outcome or result. See, one must read Life Divine. It develops the intelligence. Look at the logic, at the face, and oh, what is Sri Aurobindo saying? Pause and read. It will develop the entire, it's so systematic, logical. It's an excellent training, even for developing the mind and intelligence. When mother was asked how to develop the intelligence, mother said, read Sri Aurobindo. And absolutely. I'm not going into explaining all these little because background we have already had. So we have these two terms which are used. But page 313, in the beginning, for instance, how a fixed formula for the combination of oxygen and hydrogen comes to determine the appearance of water, which is evidently something more than a combination of gases, a new creation, a new form of substance, a material manifestation of a quite new character. It has all the characters which neither oxygen nor hydrogen has. So, then same thing with regard to genes. We know that genes and chromosomes are the cause of hereditary transmission. See, he is updated, Sri Aurobindo, writing in 40s. Absolutely updated. Not only of physical but of psychological variations, but we do not discover how psychological characteristics can be contained and transmitted in this inconscient material vehicle. By their activity on the nerves and brain of a Shakespeare or a Plato to produce, or could be perhaps the dynamic occasion for the production of a Hamlet or a Symposium or a Republic. But we fail to discover or appreciate how such material movements could have composed or necessitated the composition of these highest points of thought and literature. How this is possible? So sometimes, now again, you know, just to go on a little lighter side. So I shouldn't take the name, but somebody was saying, you know, so and so was also born on somebody's birthday, whose birthday, you know, that person is regarded as whatever kind of a genius, and somebody who is regarded as Pappu. So, you know, he was also born on the same day. So it was to pull down. I said, see, this is what the divine beauty is. On the same day, maybe the same moment, he can create such a variety. Isn't it beautiful? It is also a reminder. Sometimes people get very carried away. That also story I know of somebody who was scammed or duped into a scam. How? You know, people study. What are your important dates? 15th August, if you are a devotee. 21st February. So the person writes a letter that on 15th August, my birth date, 21st February and all this. And the person all goes gaga. Oh my God. This is surely a sign that it is mother's message to me. And one gets caught in a scam. Losing almost not just an ordinary amount. So we must understand that divine loves variation. It's not, you know, there's no rigid things like that. So here it is. He says, some people even try that child should be born on Sri Aurobindo's birthday or mother's birthday. I said, spare them, no. Please, let it be only Sri Aurobindo's birthday. This is a great joy. We can't celebrate so many birthdays on that same day. Every day should become mother and Sri Aurobindo's day. So every day, whatever is, invoke and take it that, okay, this is. So this is how Then he says, there is more to perplex us. For we see the original indeterminate energy throwing out general determinates. So that's what we have discussed. So we come to now, just to take one example. An electric energy produces positive, negative material forms. And then we see the same thing about life principle. Now imagine how, you know, so many living forms are there on earth. We cannot even count. Plant, trees, bacteria, algae, virus, human beings, God knows, so many animals. Now, what is the basic building block? Four bases, 20 amino acids. That's it. I mean, when you look at it, for me it's amazing. And that's why now the scientists are beginning to say, you cannot explain. I have read the book by Watson and Crick, this famous person who had discovered double helix. And when he discovered it, he was so excited in his lab, he went out to say, ah, this is so beautiful, it has to be true. Outside, people were all drinking, partying, and they didn't understand what beauty and what truth. Now imagine, he writes a book. I've read his book. He says, this discovery is true because he can explain things on that basis. But he says, but it is impossible by any number of chance probabilities that this could have ever happened in the primordial material soup. He says, it is just not possible. He calculated actually mathematically, what is the probability of life emerging from so many amino acids clashing here and there and arranging themselves in this way and this pattern. He says, it's impossible. So he says, probably life came from elsewhere. This was a theory which was prominent at some point of time. It was called panspermia, that some aliens came and left the seeds of life. So this was asked to Sri Aurobindo also. He says, my dear, it doesn't answer the question, it pushes it one step backward, that's all. How did life come there? Question is the same. You have not answered. You have only spoken about life on earth, somebody left it. But how did life come at all? This kind of life. So that is the, he is taking us to the perplexities first. So one of the answers is, chance, and the another answer is necessity. Shobhindo doesn't leave anything untouched because this is what we'll hear. So chance is a euphemism from my point of view that actually I don't know, but I don't want to admit that I don't know, so I use the word chance. That's my way of answering. But Shobhindo is perfectionist. No, he will not just say, no, don't say like that. He takes step and step, step by step. So he speaks of, you know, okay. Throughout, there is the constant rule of a general sameness in the original determinate, and subject to this substantial sameness of basic substance and nature, a profuse variation in the generic and individual determinations. An identical law obtains of sameness or similarity in the genus or species with numerous variations, often meticulously minute in the individual. For example, no two thumbprints are alike. Just imagine. That's how the famous Revana case, no, in Karnataka, very interesting, you know, how he was caught, an MLA who was doing all kinds of dirty things. But he was hiding himself, but taking films. Only in one of the films, his hands are captured. He didn't know science is so advanced that from a little bit of your piece of hand, it can reconstruct your face. Very interesting case it is. That they just had the picture of the hand. From there they reconstructed. See? So it's like there is a unique print that all of us have. It says a necessity of immutable sameness at the base of free and unaccountable variations. So he says, why would it be? This answer is very beautiful. On the surface seems to be the law. But who or what necessitates or determines? Oh, look at his answer. What is the rationale of the determination? What is this original truth or its significance? Why would somebody make so many stars, galaxies? Why would somebody make it? You often say, what is the purpose of creation? Now see, Shobhindo's answer. What compels or impels this exuberant play of varying possibilities, which seems to have no aim or meaning unless it be the beauty or delight of creation? He's just throwing energy here, there, everywhere, and galaxies. Beauty and delight. That one moment and this one sentence, so invigorating. So we often say, why did God create the world? For delight. Raso vaisaha. People say desire. What kind of desire will we do create, and what desire will seize him? Delight. And that's why it doesn't end, because the delight is infinite. So that is the delight and beauty. A first possible explanation points to a self-organizing dynamic chance is at work. A paradox necessitated by the appearance of inevitable order on one side, of unaccountable freak and fantasy on the other side of the cosmic phenomena. This we have already. That quantum world, if you go deep inside, you don't know. It's difficult to say there is law. That was the problem with the quantum mechanics. It changed the complete, because you can't know. Newtonian laws don't apply there. So was Newton wrong? No. Newton's laws apply on solid objects. It's very strange. The particles that have constituted the solid object, they don't come under Newton's laws. They have their own, whatever we may call it, law or lawlessness. This chaos, actually. Indeterminate. Chaos is another term. But if you go into solid object, they will follow all the laws of Newton. So there is order at one level, but there is chaos at another level. So how do you explain it? So when we can't explain, one of the terms we use is chance. But Shobhindo gives them, he's like a good advocate. So he is saying, okay, you argue your case. So he is himself arguing. So he says, one may say that acts at random and creates this or that by a general chance without any determining principle. Determinations coming in only as the result of a persistent repetition of the same rhythm of action. and succeeding because only this repetitive rhythm could succeed in keeping things in being. This is the energy of nature. So that's what we spoke about. So boundless possibility, or a womb of innumerable possibilities that are manifested out of it by the original energy. He says, but this implies that there were boundless possibilities. Out of boundless possibilities, because of chance, because any pattern could have formed. So there is a womb of boundless possibilities. So there is, again we go back to the indeterminable, which is standing behind chance saying, sir, I am also there. Please don't rubbish me off. So he is reminding us that. Yet an opposite aspect of the nature of the cosmic phenomenon as we see it appears to forbid the theory of random action generating a persistent order. So the other argument against this is there is too much of an iron insistence on order, on a law basing the possibilities. So the other part is that, okay, once you are throwing dust or this thing, you have a pattern and you can give names. Like we see the clouds and we give, you know, this is a horse going, that's called pareidolia. You know, your mind is fantasizing. But if every time a cloud passes, it's the same pattern, then you'll wonder. So probably it's not a cloud, but birds crossing and my mind is not really seeing. So he says there is too much of an iron order. So even if we take the cosmic dancer, new things, yes, but there is also a kind of sameness in patterns which is emerging. So there is an order, there is no randomness there. This brings us to a second explanation. A mechanical necessity in things, its working recognizable by us as so many mechanical laws of nature. This is very easy to actually understand. Even logically, that necessity implies there is a truth that necessitates by its very nature. That it means something is there which is compelling. Necessity means what to do. It's my necessity that I must go and grab my samosa. So what is the necessity? Hunger. That is driving me. So you can't say it is just a necessity. So behind necessity, there is something which is hidden. So this also he says, second explanation, the necessity, we might say, of some such secret inherent truth of things as we have supposed, governing automatically the processes we observe in action in the universe. But a theory of mechanical necessity by itself does not elucidate the free play of the endless, unaccountable variations which are visible in the evolution. So ultimately, we go back to the same question. If there is a necessity which compels the emergence, it can be only this, that there is already a consciousness concealed in the inconscient waiting for evolution. So this is where he takes up, I put it in nutshell, the first about maybe 10 pages, that he is giving us how science would look at this creation, and he is not just simply rubbishing it as an illusion. He is saying, yes, he is taking up, because this is the answer that physicists will tell you or biologists will tell you. They will say, well, it's random process. Though I am not entering into it, even modern experiments have proved that it's not just a random process. And with that I'll stop. For example, they did a very interesting accident experiment. Now there are so many experiments like that because supramental action. So science is moving in that direction. So there is a man sitting in this room and there is another person in that room who is picking up certain numbers or certain cards. Now the man sitting in this room has no way of knowing what's happening there. His mobile has been kept. So he is asked to guess. So he guesses. Now when you have guessing work, there is a probability. That's what is called in mathematics, that randomly if you guess, what are the chances that you will hit and what are the chances you will miss. So if the guessing falls within the range of probability, you say, well, it's all chance, random. But if it doesn't fit, take an example that if 5 times out of 5, out of 10 he is right, and 5 times, say if you take equal probability, 5 times he should be wrong. But if one guesses 7 times or 8 times, in one of the experiments it has gone to 9 times out of 10, then you cannot explain it by random chance and probability. So of course the explanation is, they are trying to explain, and there are different explanations, but all of them are going toward this, that there is something which operates within us, which we call as intuition. Now that the scientists are touching, that you cannot explain that how a person sitting in one room can guess what is going on there by chance or whatever, and it goes beyond the probability, random probability, this thing. So this is the how science is advancing, and Sri Aurobindo had set the tone or the note nearly, how many, 77, 78 years back. Even before that, if you read his essays, Divine and New, 100 years back, Sri Aurobindo has foreseen all this. Now, reading it, it becomes simple. If somebody is keeping abreast with the latest developments, I had read a book called End of Science, and you know, where you reach that, now it's relatively easy. People read the Life Divine, they can connect some of the things. But that time, Sri Aurobindo is writing all this and taking into account the scientist view. Why? Because before you take up the next view, you must exhaust the possibility. So this is the beauty of the Life Divine. And as I said, one of the things it develops is the logical intelligence, because nothing is left out, nothing is missed. And one of the best things that happens is that we stop believing every video that comes on WhatsApp. Okay, so we'll meet in the second session after 10 minutes. Thank you.